Herzlich willkommen zu Dialog, dem Podcast des Diakoniewerks für MitarbeiterInnen und Interessierte. In diesem Podcast tauchen wir ein in die Welt des Diakoniewerks und erfahren mehr über seinen Auftrag im Sinne der Nächstenliebe, Projekte und die Menschen dahinter. Wir sprechen darüber, wie das Diakoniewerk einen positiven Beitrag zur Gesellschaft und einer hoffnungsvollen Zukunft leistet. Außerdem beschäftigen wir uns mit dem Transformationsprozess im Unternehmen und sprechen an, was sich verändert. Mein Name ist Nora Meyer und ich darf euch, liebe Hörerinnen, durch diesen Podcast begleiten. Anlässlich des Welt-Alzheimer-Tags am 21. September 2024 haben wir heute eine Spezialfolge geplant. Rund 151.000 Menschen leben ja in Österreich mit einer demenziellen Erkrankung. Laut der Weltgesundheitsorganisation WHO sind weltweit derzeit unglaubliche 55,2 Millionen Menschen von Demenz betroffen. Wie und mit welchen Konzepten reagiert die Gesellschaft auf diese Entwicklung? Wie unterscheiden sich die Ansätze in den unterschiedlichen Ländern und vor allem, was wünschen sich Menschen mit Demenz? Darüber wollen wir heute sprechen mit zwei ganz besonderen Gästen, Tön Töbes und Jonathan de Jong. Ich werde die Fragen in dieser Podcast-Folge auf Deutsch stellen und die beiden werden auf Englisch antworten. Also es ist eine multilinguale Folge, nur damit, liebe Hörerinnen und Hörer, ihr das vorab schon wisst. Einmal ein paar Infos über die beiden. Tön Töbes ist ausgebildeter Altenpfleger und Pflegeethiker und engagiert sich seit vielen Jahren für eine bessere Begleitung für Menschen mit Demenz. Sein Buch, der 21-Jährige, der freiwillig in ein Pflegeheim zog und von seinen Mitbewohnern mit Demenz lernte, was Menschlichkeit bedeutet, war ein Bestseller. Jonathan de Jong ist ein mehrfach preisgekrönter Dokumentarfilmer und seit vielen Jahren mit Tön Töbes unterwegs, um die Lebenswelten von Menschen mit Demenz filmisch festzuhalten. Mit dem Film Human Forever haben sie in Holland und Belgien die Kinos gestürmt und viele Auszeichnungen bekommen. Lieber Tön, lieber Jonathan, schön, dass ihr heute bei uns im Podcast Dialog zu Gast seid. Welcome.
Schön, bei Ihnen zu sein.
Vielen Dank.
Ihr kommt ja gerade von einer Reise aus Samoa, ein weit entferntes Land, wo ihr an einem neuen Projekt gearbeitet habt und ihr habt jetzt den weiten Weg auf euch genommen, um in Linz bei der Österreich-Premiere für euren Film Human Forever in der Tabakfabrik dabei zu sein. Was würdet ihr sagen? Was treibt euch denn an? Was motiviert euch, überhaupt diese Wege und Anstrengungen auf euch zu nehmen für das Thema Demenz? Tön.
Together we can create a more hopeful and more inclusive society for people living with dementia, because now we mainly see dementia as a care problem, but it is a societal issue. Together, if we look differently, we can change our approach towards dementia. So on the one hand, it's a belief in the better future. And on the other hand, personally, I deeply feel worried about the future of people living with dementia now, because if we listen to people with dementia, people tell us that they often feel excluded, that they have the feeling that they aren't taken seriously, that they don't matter. And that's why we started this quest around the world. How are other countries looking at dementia? What can we learn from different cultures? And how can we adapt those lessons into our own culture in order to improve the quality of life of people living with dementia? Because that's the most important, how to improve the quality of life.
Also die Leute integrieren. Jonathan, vielleicht auch an dich diese erste Frage. Was treibt dich an, dieses Projekt mitzutragen?
Like Tön said, we had a dream about bringing a more nuanced story around dementia to the world stage. And it's very hopeful to see that since the beginning of this mission, people are so hungry for a different view when it comes to dementia. Because, like also Tön said, like people, they ask for help with their normal life. They don't ask for care per se. So when you still see the human being and you start listening to them, then you hear a complete different story about what dementia is. Because it's from the perspective of a human being who wants help with a good life. And everybody, healthy or not, is looking for the best possible life, like a meaningful life. What we did in the first film, we saw like no matter the culture, no matter the country, everybody is looking for a meaningful life. But if we exclude people based on a diagnosis, then they feel that life has no meaning at all. So it's very hopeful to see that if we can change our view, that people will improve their quality of life instantly. So, and it's, yeah, like the film is such a big success, only established that people are really ready for a new perspective around dementia.
So it's all about perspective and changing the view. So alles geht die Perspektive und die ein bisschen abzuändern. Lieber Tyn, nimm uns doch einmal ein bisschen mit in deine Vergangenheit. Warum hast du überhaupt als junger Mensch den Pflegeberuf ergriffen? Was war deine Motivation dafür? Hat es da vielleicht in der Vergangenheit schon Kontakt gegeben in der Familie, wo du dir gedacht hast, ich will das machen?
I had a very classic dream, as most of the guys starting a nursing education, and that's to become a paramedic. So my dream was to work in the acute care sector. But when I entered the nursing home for a mandatory internship, I saw that the doors of the closed wards were opening, and immediately I felt like I was entering a surreal nobody's land. I was walking on a closed ward where on the one hand I saw the deep humanity in people living with dementia and my colleagues and the family caretakers, but on the other hand I experienced a system which focuses on control and safety. And that's what the nursing home system is for me. It's a system where the collective safety is more important than the individual's quality of life. So when I was working in a nursing home after my study, I asked my colleagues, would you like to live here yourself if you get diagnosed with dementia? Because the chance is 1 in 5 that you get diagnosed yourself. And most of my colleagues, they all said no. And that made me realize, why did we create a system like this with all the good intentions we have? A system where we spend over 18 billion euros a year on in the Netherlands. It's a system where almost no one wants to live in. So what should we do differently in order to create a better future for us all? And that's the most important, constantly asking those questions. And then you will get answers which help people with dementia themselves.
Lieber Jonathan, erzähl uns doch auch von deinem Werdegang. Ist dir das Filmen schon quasi in die Wiege gelegt worden? Und vor allem, wie hast du dann Tun kennengelernt? Wie haben sich eure Wege gekreuzt?
Yes, it was 4 years ago that I got a phone call from a manager from a nursing home, where I made a series about dementia before I met Teun. It was for Dutch television. I made a series, a documentary series of 6 episodes. And it was about a care farm where they had a really natural approach to people living with dementia. And it was so hopeful because my own experience, it wasn't a coincidence that I made a series about dementia, because I was a bus driver during my college. I had a side job. I was a bus driver for daycare. And there I came in contact with people living with dementia. And that was a very classical way. Also the experience that Teun just told about the nursing home, the closed ward, where, yeah, as a youngster, you're a bit shocked because you think like, oh my God, you can also live like this when you get older. And that's not like the paradise thought that you, when you think of getting older and better. So when I got the phone call from the manager, she said, Jonathan, we made the series, but now I'm sitting next to a young guy. He's 21 years old. I was like, that's young. Mm-hmm. His name is Teun Tubes. It's a hard name, very Dutch name. I was like, oh,
Teun Tubes.
Teun Tubes.
I will get used
yeah.
to
And I didn't know him, but she said like, and he just moved into a nursing home. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with Teun? And she said, like, nothing. He really, he feels worried about the future, but you really should connect because I think you will be a great team.
You still think it, right? What's wrong with Teun after 4 years?
Changed your mind?
No, I didn't change my mind. No, it's really, and then when I first saw Teun and we had the first conversation in a nursing home and I saw how he made contact with his housemates, it was so loving, it was so tender. And I really thought back of my own time when I was working in a nursing home, when I also had very nice experiences with people living with dementia, because I could share stories with them. And I saw Teun sharing stories with what he experienced in his life. So we both had the opinion that there was a more nuanced story to tell, but you didn't see it in the media. also with the first series that I made for Dutch television, like the board of directors from the broadcast company, they asked me, Jonathan, can you make it a bit more sad? Because if I see people with dementia laughing, people won't think they have dementia. So the stigma around dementia is really bad. And that's what we thought. We have to change it by honoring the people who are living with dementia and tell their story. Not about them, with them. And I think we succeeded in that because it's a really a fragile story, but it's a really warm-hearted human forever, yeah.
So dieser Gedanke, eben dieser Perspektivenänderung, würdet ihr sagen, das hat euch beide auch in der Zusammenarbeit von Anfang an dann verbunden, oder?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's a story about love for humanity. I think that's what we feel both every day because it's a mission 24 hours a day for the last 4 years. But we keep on going because we feel it's really changing the way we think, but especially improving the quality of life for those people we so often forget, yeah.
Tyn, gehen wir einmal auf diese Experience genauer ein. Du hast ja wirklich einen sehr ungewöhnlichen Weg beschritten, hast mit 21 Jahren entschieden, in ein Pflegeheim zu gehen und wirklich dort mit Menschen mit Demenz zu leben. Wie kommt man als junger Mensch eben auf seine doch sehr ungewöhnliche Idee, dort wirklich auch einzuziehen? Hat es da auch einen speziellen Auslöser gegeben oder würdest du sagen, das hast du nach deiner Zeit in dieser Ward, wie du vorher erzählt hast, bist du da auf den Gedanken dann gekommen, das zu machen?
Yeah, I lived for over 3.5 years on the close ward of a nursing home to live up close with people living with dementia and to learn from them. And most importantly, to listen to people with dementia. Because in my Ausbildung, during my study, I've learned many methodologies, techniques, for instance, motivational speaking is a technique in order to reach a behavior change. But what I learned for the first time when I was living together with people with dementia, they were my housemates, is the value of listening. Listening without having your own aim. And if we listen to people with dementia, we will learn many different things. For instance, some people with dementia told me, my housemates, that dementia can be really painful on the one hand, but what's more painful is the fact that people feel excluded socially. We've made dementia a social death, and that's very painful to hear. But on the other hand, it's also really hopeful because we can change our perspective on that, we as a society. And in those 3.5 years I lived in a nursing home, I've met my housemates as friends. I really made new friends. I started loving my housemates. Not because they had dementia, of course, because I didn't know what type of dementia they had. I didn't know who was their legal representative, their gesetzliche Vertreter. The only thing I knew was what they showed me, what they made me feel, what they wanted to tell. So they had the identity they wanted to have. And that was a really beautiful thing to experience. I can't say it's a rational thought, the decision to end up living in a nursing home. It's more a feeling. It's a law for humanity and people living with dementia.
Aber wie kann man sich das vorstellen? Wie war dann da dein Alltag in diesem Heim? Wie hast du zum Beispiel auch dann deine Wochenenden verbracht? Erzähl uns ein bisschen davon.
Yeah, I just had the same room as my housemates had. I was living on the hallway. We had many rooms. We had a shared bathroom. We had a living room where we were eating together. But there's one thing in those 3.5 years, and that's that I had a very big privilege. I had the privilege to have the code of the door, and that's the code 2017. I was able to visit society, but my housemates weren't, which is really painful, and which also shows why it is so badly needed to stop having a close ward as a standard. But for that, society is needed. In the nursing home, life was just like living with your friends. For instance, my housemate Ott, when I've met him, he was feeling really depressed. He was living in a room next to me. But during those years we were living together, we really became best friends. And every night I heard him coming to my room, knocking on my door, and he asked, hey mate, do you want to come drink a beer and watch football, watch soccer with me on my room? And that's what we did. It's really beautiful to experience the reciprocity of a friendship with people with dementia. Mm.
Du hast es eh gerade angesprochen, das waren wahrscheinlich diese Alltagsmomente, eben gemeinsam ein Bier trinken am Abend, Football zu schauen. Was waren auch noch schöne, aber auch traurige Momente, die du dann wahrscheinlich ja auch erlebt hast in diesen drei
Jahren? Ja, natürlich. The most painful for me was the fact that society sees people with dementia as one group of sick people. And so often I heard from people around me, for instance, my friends, why do you invest in people with dementia? Because they constantly forget. And if we think about dementia like this, we don't value the happiness in the moment. We don't value the relationship you can still have. Because also my housemate Ad, for instance, he didn't know my name, but he knew the feeling we gave to each other. And that was so, so strong. In fact, the message of the film, Humor Forever, it's not something we thought, it's something what people with dementia told ourselves. And if we start listening to people with dementia, if we value them again as a human being, and if we don't see them only in the role of a patient, then a better future is closer than ever.
So, also diese Rolle des Patienten einfach, die dürfen wir nicht mehr so als Stigma verwenden für Menschen mit Demenz. Ist das, würdest du sagen, auch eine der wichtigsten Botschaften, die in deinem Buch enthalten ist?
Yeah, the most important message is that if we keep seeing the human being, then he will never disappear. So if we get a more nuanced and honest view on dementia, which not only focuses on people's loss, then we can change our approach to people with dementia. We can make sure that people are still seen and that they feel that they are a valued part of society. Changes in our narrative.
Ja. Jonathan, Frage an dich. Wie waren denn für dich so die ersten Begegnungen mit Menschen mit Demenz? Wie fühlt man sich da? Hat man auch eine gewisse Hemmung, Angst, Neugier? Wie würdest du sagen, ist das dir da ergangen?
Like I just told also before, during my college, I came in contact with people with dementia first. And I was quite shocked when I entered the close ward, because when I picked them up from home, they're in the beginning phase of dementia and they could talk very well. And then when I entered the close ward, I saw people in the wheelchairs. Sometimes they were tightened with a belt, because it was quite long ago. So with my fellow students, because in the weekend there were only students working there, we said to each other, this is not a place where you dream of to become older. So a lot of people said like, oh, when I get older, I want to have an injection and I want to die because I don't want to end up like this. If we started like working there for longer and longer, we thought like, why don't we talk about this? For like, especially for youngsters, because this is also, this can also be our future. That was what I realized. And when I became a filmmaker many years later, I thought like, I have to tell people about the parallel universe that is waiting for us if we don't start talking about this and maybe talk about risk and the quality of life that we can also have with dementia. Because yeah, I think the nursing home isn't a place where we dream of. So I thought it was really important also when I spoke with Teun to make dementia sexy, because it sounds funny. We don't want to make the disease sexy, but we want to make it so sexy that people start talking about it. Because nowadays, when you say dementia, people think like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. It's so scary. And ooh, I don't want to lose myself. They have all the stigma stuff in their minds. And I think it's so important that we pull off the stigma and have a relaxed conversation about it to say, what is the best possible life also when you have a diagnosis of dementia? And that story, there are so many positive initiatives around the world who are doing such a great job in creating a better life for people with dementia if you just treat them as a human being. And that's the power of the film and the power of our storytelling. It is not about more money, about more products. It's about our intrinsic motivation about changing our narrative.
Gehst du mit der Krankheit auch in deiner Familie zum Beispiel um? Was erzählst du beispielsweise deinen Kindern, wenn du dann über deine Arbeit erzählst? Mit welchem Mindset wachsen die auch? Haben die schon dieses Mindset, Dementia is sexy?
They think of it as a normal thing. So I have a nursing home close by. We also filmed there for Human Forever. And sometimes I go there for coffee with I have three little children, 8, 6 and 4. And they call it the palace of the elderly because they're nice. Being spoiled. They get tea, they get cookies, biscuits, they can go outside. They don't know that it's anything wrong or that they're sick or because they're just being spoiled as a normal grandparents would do. So, and when I tell them that sometimes when you get older, you maybe sometimes forget or you get some other things that that are a bit difficult, they accept it as it is. So if I speak about it normally, they won't fear it or they won't be asking funny questions. Mm. So I think that's the whole point of changing the narrative. Also, especially for young people, when we talk about it, that it's a part of life where we have to deal with. And of course, everybody wants to be healthy in the end. But if it's not, then we still have to think of what do you want? And that's what I thought. Like, I had a neighbor, she was 92 years old, Marie. She didn't have dementia, but I think it's a really good example on how we treat people with and without dementia. In our last phase of life, she fell down the stair for like 3 times in 2 months. So she was bruised, all blue, and all her children said like, "Mom, you have to go to a nursing home." And the only thing she said like, "Over my dead body. It's my life. I lived here for 65 years. It's my right to decide if I want to go or not." But if she would have dementia, she wouldn't have had the choice of falling down the staircase and maybe passing away. So I think it's really also there. Her quality of life was to live at home, accepting the risks of that she can fall or whatever may happen in house. But she was okay with it and her children had to accept it. And that was a really beautiful thought because they respected her and she said like, "Mom, okay, maybe we'll fall another 2 times, but if that's your quality of life, it's okay."
Jetzt haben wir viel über Holland gesprochen, wie die Situation in Holland ist, wahrscheinlich auch in Europa, man kann es wahrscheinlich auf Österreich auch umlegen. Ihr seid ja dann gemeinsam auf eine Weltreise aufgebrochen, um zu erforschen, wie unterschiedlichste Länder den Umgang und die Pflege von Menschen mit Demenz gestalten. Wo seid ihr schon überall gewesen und was habt ihr euch denn von diesen Reisen Spannendes mitgenommen? Tün.
We've traveled through 11 countries in 4 different continents to learn from the different cultures, initiatives and countries we visited. For instance, South Korea, South Africa, the United States of America, Moldova, which is a bit more closer home. We've been in Belgium, in Swiss, in Scandinavia. So we saw many places where people already show that the change, which is so badly needed, is already here. Because we've seen beautiful places where quality of life is the main goal and not quality of care. So what we wanted to do with Humo Forever is to share those initiatives and to make everyone part of this change, to create a worldwide movement. And that's very hopeful that it is happening at this moment. We can learn from all the different cultures there are.
Was würdet ihr sagen, war das Beispiel, wo ihr gesagt habt, wow, die machen es am besten? Gibt es sowas? Oder?
I think that's a very funny question because almost everyone asks, what is the best example? And that tells a lot about the way we look at change because we want the best example. We just want to copy it. We want to pay money for it. And then the change is here. But the funny thing is, this is not about more products. That's what we always think. This is not about more money. It's about what do we do with the resources we have? What's the vision we have? How do we create a better future for people living with dementia in practice? And if we really want to make that the reality, then we should change our culture. It's not about all the resources we have. Because in the Netherlands, for instance, we've spent over 109 billion euro a year on healthcare.
Which
also,
is a lot.
We in the Netherlands, we say we need more money. If we continue saying this, we say to all different countries, you don't have any hope because you don't have the same amount of resources as we have. And what we've seen, there are places in the world which have less resources, way less, but quality of life is more leading. People are still living together because living together is the solution to survive. Living together is the answer in a community. And in our Western world, especially in Europe, we want to pay for healthcare. We make healthcare a product and we pay off the responsibility to take care of each other. There are so many beautiful places in the world where people are still living together. So we have to share all those initiatives.
Yeah. And especially think like in the West, we only think in impossibilities. And what we learn in other cultures more far away, they adapt to life, how it develops instantly. So if somebody gets a diagnose, the family comes together and say like, how are we going to fix this? Because we love each other. The best possible life, what we can give as a family, is to take care in one way or the other. And then they change their lives to facilitate the best possible life for somebody who needs it. And we only say in the West, oh, yeah, but we can't live like this because we have a mortgage. We want to go on holidays for 3 times. We go skiing. We go to beautiful islands. But it's a choice. Like, we made the individual so important and we made a career so important that we forgot each other along the way to success. And I think when we capture what we also did in Samoa and also in Brazil, where we filmed for the last movie, where we see what's the reciprocity of taking care of each other, I think people will definitely make a change in their life to see that it looks like a sacrifice, but it is a gift in the end. Because when people are taking care of each other in a community, the quality of life improves so much, no money can buy it. You can see it. And we have all the money in the world, like Tone said. And we still are in search of like a meaningful life. And we fly to Kathmandu for yoga retreats and all those kind of things. But I think the real value lies in our community where we live. So we really have to invest in our own communities where we live around the world and to see how we can improve the quality of life for each other.
Mm. Und du kritisierst ja auch, dass es so wenig Prävention gibt in Europa. Woran liegt das deiner Meinung nach und könnte sich das ändern?
If we go a bit more back, I was living in a nursing home with my housemates, but in total I was living with 130 housemates. All those housemates were living with dementia. All those housemates were living in the nursing home because of their dementia, because they had a care indication. If we look at our healthcare system critically, the fundament of our system is someone's disease, is someone's diagnosis. And if a diagnosis stays the most important thing, then we can't expect that quality of life is the result of that system. We've been in South Korea, for instance, where the prevention of dementia is state priority. They developed together with researchers and entrepreneurs a digital methodology in order to prevent the development of Alzheimer's dementia, the most common form of dementia. It's a digital way of therapeutics, which, for instance, supports people's social contacts to keep people be in society. And the most important thing is keep developing. Because if we look at the way we age in our world, we stop working and then we don't develop anymore. In South Korea, they did everything to keep people being active in society. So why do we hear so less about prevention of dementia in Europe? Because the fundament is different. We look different at life. And that's also the answer. How can we change that? By changing the narrative and by sharing that it is possible in some ways of Alzheimer's dementia to prevent the development of Alzheimer's dementia. But we have to share the knowledge, because in South Korea, research has showed that it is possible to prevent around 40% of the amounts of people who get dementia. It doesn't mean that we can prevent everything. And on the other hand, we also should accept that developing a disease stays part of your life, because we stay a human being, we stay vulnerable. And that's not always bad, as long as the focus stays the quality of life of someone.
Yeah, sorry. And I think also with prevention, it's really something like the most famous thing with prevention is, of course, quit smoking. But people always think like, oh, I can't do it. It's not good because I will lose so much quality of life because I really enjoy it. And it's the same thing with prevention when it comes to dementia. People think like, oh, I have to give up so much, really make so much, so many sacrifices in order to prevent something that will happen much, much later in my life, because dementia starts 30 years before diagnosis, they say. So, but what we saw in South Korea was the opposite. When people are 60 and they join the program of 24 weeks, they came together with a group. So they made many new friends together. And they said to us, like, first I thought when you get older, you have to accept that your life is going to be worse and worse and worse until you die. But now I see my brains can learn new things. Also, when I'm 60, I can make new friends. I can have a better social life. And all those things creates a new life. So it's really how we look at ageism. Ageism, what's the problem? Because if we look at getting older as a good thing and that you can still have a good life, then we all will start to have a develop a richer life also when you get older. So people think and have to accept that if you get older, you're not of use anymore in our society because it's only about rationality. But we saw the opposite happening in South Korea, where people were really improving their quality of life by joining the program, by being more active, by making new friends. They really had a third life, they said. So it was really hopeful to see.
Frage an dich, Tön. In Österreich wird ja ein Großteil der hilfs- und pflegebedürftigen Menschen zu Hause betreut. Was brauchen denn deiner Meinung nach pflegende Angehörige? Es ist ja auch wirklich anstrengend, sich da die ganze Zeit zu kümmern.
I'm very happy to hear that most people live at home, because if we listen to people with dementia themselves, that's the biggest wish of people. But we have to support people at home better, because having a nursing home as the last place you can go to is not the best answer we can give as a society. So we have to support each other in the communities where people are living. And that's also the answer to the question, what do the Angehörigen need? It's a more honest story about living with dementia, because our care system focuses on zero risks. We don't accept risks in life. But if the focus stays zero risk, then there's zero life. Mm. So we, as a society, we have to accept that also when you are living with dementia, life comes with risks. And if you accept those risks, and by that, I don't say that safety is not important, but it is about a more balance between safety on the one hand and quality of life on the other hand. If you accept the risk of life, then life will get way more easy. But if you become a patient in the care system we have, we try everything to do to reach zero risk. To give you three examples, for instance, if you have the risk to choke, you get thickener. If you have the risk to fall, you get a walker. If you have the risk to don't eat enough, you get protein drink to keep your body active. I don't say that all those products are bad, that we shouldn't give it to people living at home. But what I do say is that we have to listen to people with dementia themselves. Do you want it? Do you need it? And does it support your quality of life? And if you constantly ask those questions, if you speak about it, even and also if you're living at home, then you can embrace life also living with dementia.
Manche müssen ja dann doch in ein Pflegeheim. Wie können wir denn das dann so gestalten, dass es eben keine Schreckensvorstellung mehr ist, dahin zu müssen? Wie wäre da deine Lösung? Auch mehr zu reden mit den Menschen, und vor allem, ist das auch nur eine Aufgabe von den Nursing People oder auch Aufgabe der Politik, damit zu reden?
Everyone is needed in this societal change, and that's exactly why it is a societal issue. It is about the way we look at dementia. It is about the way we look at life. In the nursing homes, we have to tell a more honest story, because, and that's also my experience, if you look at the websites of nursing homes, you only see happy elderly people smiling. You see a healthcare worker one-on-one in contact with someone living with dementia. But if we look at reality, reality is different. So we should tell a more honest story. We should tell to family, we need you because we can't make people happy ourselves. We need you in this. And we have to speak about the risks in life and share the responsibility for those risks also in politics, because that's why we need to include them. If an accident happens, then we often are searching for who is guilty. And then we have new collective measurements to prevent new incidents. But then we should speak about the vision we have. Quality of life is the most important. And the fact that one incident can happen to you when you are living with dementia doesn't mean that we have to lock everyone with dementia up on the close part. So it's always about a balance between collective on the one hand and the individual on the other hand.
Abschließend noch eine Frage an euch beide. Was wünscht ihr euch denn für die Zukunft? Ihr habt jetzt so viel gesehen in den letzten Jahren beim Filmen weltweit. Was wünscht ihr euch für die Zukunft im Umgang mit dem Thema? Fast forward, sagen wir 10 years from now.
I hope within 10 years dementia is a subject that it's a common thing to talk about. That it's not an elderly subject. That it's a subject that we are addressing the same as we addressing all other diagnoses and stuff, and especially that we approach it through the human being. That we just say, for instance, when you get cancer or whatever, that you say, okay, you have this, how can we support you in a, such a, in your best way possible, of best quality of life? And I think that should be the question when people get dementia too. How can we support you in your life so that you can experience the best quality? And I have one example, and then I will, like, I thought also in a nursing home, like you said before, next to me, the nursing home is there, Annika lives there, and Annika, she loves to walk for hours. And when she came into the nursing home, her children said, because they promised her mother, that she could go outside and have her walks, even though all the risks in life could mean something for her life. And then the nursing home said, like, okay, that's challenging, but we accept it. We go to the city hall. They asked the mayor and all the people in the city hall, we want this as a healthcare organization. So do you approve that if something happens, nobody is taking the blame, but it's a decision that we made together. They all agreed on it. And the beautiful thing is, Annika walks 3 times a week next to my house for 3.5 kilometers to the village where she can buy her groceries, where she can buy her plants, what she loves. She walks back over a highway, over a railway. And everybody says, we think it's your life and we want to improve your quality of life. So we accept the risk. So I hope we get more of those examples around the world. Then I will be really happy.
Toon, Frage auch an dich noch. Fast forward 10 years from now, Umgang mit Dementia. Was wünschst du dir?
What I really hope for people living with dementia is that this message, human forever, is not special anymore. That it is normal to include people with dementia, and that we, as a society, have a more nuanced view on dementia. That we ask questions we don't ask now. Why do we do the things we do? But most importantly, in the end, this message is not about dementia. This message is about the way we look at each other. At this moment, we make people with dementia the other. But if we see people with dementia as human beings like you and me, society is way more beautiful. So I hope that we don't see this message only for people with dementia, but that we are living more together as a whole society. This is not only about care. This is about us.
Schöne Worte am Schluss. Vielen Dank für diese wirklich sehr berührenden Einblicke in das Thema Demenz und vor allem auch großen Respekt an euch beide, dass ihr euch dem Thema in einer wirklich sehr großartigen Art und Weise annehmt. 150 Jahre mit und für Menschen. Das Diakoniewerk hat dank seiner engagierten Mitarbeiter und Mitarbeiterinnen über all die Jahre Großartiges geleistet. Und auch die nächste Zeit bringt sehr viel Neues. Wir dürfen in diesem Podcast über den Transformationsprozess im Unternehmen informieren und nehmen euch, liebe Hörerinnen, auf dieser Reise sehr gerne mit. Offene Fragen beantwortet das Kommunikationsteam des Diakoniewerks. Alle Infos und Kontaktdaten sind wie immer in den Shownotes verlinkt. Ja, und wenn ihr auch weiterhin Infos rund um das Diakoniewerk hören möchtet, abonniert bitte den Podcast gleich auf der Plattform, wo ihr gerade zuhört. Ist das Spotify, dann aktiviert auch gleich die Glocke, damit ihr keine Folge mehr verpasst. Das war eine Spezialfolge von Dialog zum Welt-Alzheimer-Tag. Die nächste Episode erscheint dann wieder im regulären Rhythmus. Der ist ja zweiwöchentlich am Dienstag. Ich sage herzlichen Dank an Thün Töbesch und Jonathan de Jong fürs Dasein und ich wünsche euch viel Erfolg auf eurer Reise. Vielen
Dank. Danke dir.
Vielen Dank.
Und bis bald.
Dieser Podcast wurde produziert von WePodit.